Previously on Floating Space.
So we really try not to think of ourselves as a club, and we really don't like to think of ourselves as exclusive.
Things after COVID has definitely changed the landscape of being a creative.
I used to call this place home from home. Like,
my world feels a lot smaller.
Is it like a third wheel?
Welcome back to Floating Space, the hunt for the third places we belong in. Sociologist Ray Oldenburg suggested everyone needs three places in their lives. A first place, their home. A second place, their workplace. And a third place, a place to gather easily, inexpensively, regularly, and pleasurably. Somewhere neutral, you can socialise, interact, and just be. This week's search has brought me to the weird, wonderful, and wild windows of online spaces.
Facebook.
Instagram.
WhatsApp.
X. Twitter.
Discord.
Now, you might be wondering why I'm including online spaces in this hunt for my third place. It doesn't fit into Oldenburg's original theory because, well, the internet wasn't a thing at the time. But today's reality is there are 5.4 billion daily internet users. That's 66% of the global population. Online spaces are so enmeshed in our lives and prominent in how we communicate and connect with each other. It would be crazy to not consider online third spaces people seek refuge in somewhere on this wide web. Now, the online world is the baby of all spaces. The web as we know it, she's only around 30 years old. And yes, that is very young to any Gen Alpha listeners here. Without getting too technical, the internet's evolution has been nothing short of incredible. As early as the 1970s, the internet was used for file sharing by academics, research institutions, and the military. It was a global network of interconnected computers. Internet. Very clever. It was pretty much reserved for highly technical people to operate and use. Fast forward to the 90s, and this is where it really takes a turn. The public gained access to the World Wide Web, a specific part of the internet that provided access to web pages, and the use of email for businesses grew. Then came the chat rooms, bulletin boards, instant messaging on MSN and Skype, RIP, blogging, social networking sites, social media apps, content-driven communities, and, well, who knows what's next? There are 1,000 routes we could explore in the online universe, but for the sake of your ears and my editing, I'm looking at spaces for community building, where people can interact and just be. So where do we start? I'm what you might call a lurker. I'm chronically online, but I don't really post or participate in the comments section. I'll send you your daily dose of 30 memes while ignoring your message on WhatsApp. I'm so sorry to friends listening. I will get back to you soon. Once upon a time, I was a YouTube kid posting the random stream of consciousness 12-year-olds post. Like this.
Hello and welcome to the Protection and Conservation of the Unicorn and Sheep Association.
Let's bury that back in a hole it can never get out of. And like a lot of people, about 80% of my life is online. My work, my friends who live in different cities and countries, my family that live halfway across the world, my downtime, or as some people might call it, doom scrolling. But for the life of me, I can't imagine being in an online space that provides meaningful community. I'm just too self-conscious or scared of stranger danger to allow myself to do it, I think. I clearly needed some expert advice on what it is to build that bridge in the online world to forge a community. So in a sky full of influencers, I shot for the stars and asked the person I have been a long-time admirer of, whose words are stitched together like a handmade blanket, and their connection with their readers is intimate, heartfelt, and genuine. Not to mention they were a huge part of an epic digital media empire.
Hi, my name is Belle Hawkins. I'm a predominantly a writer, but I also work as an art director and strategist, and recently wrote a book with my friend Lucy from a tiny media company you might not have heard of called Shit You Should Care About.
Shit You Should Care About.
On Shit You Should Care About.
Siska, Shit You Should Care About. 3.6 million followers.
Our debut book, Make It Make Sense.
So my first question I want to ask is, do you know what a third place is?
Yeah, I do. I wrote about this about a year ago. I think when you don't come from a religion or you don't live close to your family, two things that are true for me, that search for a third space is, it's less prescribed. It's sort of like a quest you have to go on and figure it out yourself. I think the way in which we seek third spaces is sort of becoming more fragmented too because of the lives in which we live online. So instead of having like a defined, you know, a 9-to-5 job, and then I go home and I'm in a traditional concept of a relationship, and my third space is the gym. Now we have things like hybrid working and working remotely, and people juggling a lot more sort of like nuanced ways of living. I think this concept of a third space is very much evolving to reflect that.
Belle has the unique perspective of being a curator and creator of an online third place. Belle bears her soul online through her newsletter, The Word Resort, and previously on her column, Belle Chimes In, that sat in the Shit You Should Care About, or Siska for short, universe, alongside an online book club with a Discord channel, a daily newsletter breaking down the news, pop culture, and life advice, two podcasts, and an Instagram account with daily polls, memes, and a community channel where users can chat, comment, and meet. I wanted to talk to Belle about towing the line between being an online person and being consumed by it.
I think it's really easy to vilify online spaces as not being real enough, like first and foremost, and I've seen them become extremely nourishing and supportive and abundant places for people who have gone through something traumatic, are working through addiction therapy, are coming out as queer or trans, and online actually is a safer, gentler, kinder place for them to be than in reality. And I think that's incredible. But I do think it gets to a point where it always needs to be enmeshed with real life. And I do worry that the ease of online has sort of taken away our bravery. And by that, I mean, like, we're sort of in this mental state where it's like a safer, easier version of this always exists online, and I can get in bed and like tap my way into connecting it. And like, yes, online spaces and code switching is important and nourishing and valuable, but I think it always needs to be supported with a getting out of your houseness of it. And I've watched it with friends who have had these really nourishing online communities, but they're still suffering a really deep sense of loneliness because they maybe work from home, work remote, have these digital interactions, shut their laptop at 7 p.m. and are just like in the abyss of the real world. So unless you go out and like push your hand and open a door and be in a room of strangers, whether that's a bar or a dance studio or a knitting group, it's never going to fully come full circle for you in terms of like the benefits of third spaces and community, I think.
I really resonated with Belle's perspective. These spaces can be healing and fulfilling because of their accessibility. But are these online spaces just facilitators for offline relationships? A stepping stone? Means to an end to meet in real life? I don't think that's the whole picture.
I never needed to meet someone in real life for me to know if they were my friend or not.
What about the relationships that never leave cyberspace? How do they come about?
Hi, my name is Sam Teasdale. I am from Kendal, Cumbria, the Lake District up in the northwest of England. I'm 30 years old. I've got background in IT. I am married and have a wonderful daughter. My main third space and the reason I'm here today is the online world. And more specifically for myself is actually video games.
Okay, so give me a little background on how like you got into playing games.
The whole core to it is that you continue the day that you had at school with, you know, the conversations you were having just on mic while doing something else. And that something else to us was video games. And the fun element sort of takes over just a little bit. So you go from like just being okay being in a lobby playing video games with your friends, and it morphs into something else, and that something else is I want to be the best of my friendship group. And to do that, you need to expose yourself to better players of those games, and to do that you need to get a different social group essentially. And that's difficult, especially as like a 12 to 14 year old in the early days of the internet, where everything is deemed terrifying and unsafe. So of my friendship group, they had a friend that I'd never met before, they didn't know them in real life, but they were a little bit better, and they had a friendship group. So you'd maybe do one game with your friend and his friend, and then you'd eventually spend time less with your actual friend and then more with his friend and their friendship groups, and so on and so forth, until you're no longer dependent on the original friendship group to be able to play with these other people.
Okay, walk me through that pipeline then. Walk me to, what's the bridge from we're playing the game to come visit me in England, come to my wedding?
I was probably in conversation with or accessible to for upwards of 40 plus hours a week every week for 10 years, probably. You can't hide behind that. That's the funniest part about the online spaces, is that people see or think, when they don't know much about it, their assumption is that it being behind a computer screen is very easy to hide who you are. You can mold who you want to be. And to some degree, that's correct. That's why there is malicious people out there in every circle, but especially so on the internet. You can hide who you are. But in the sense of where I'm coming from, as a space, as a social group, as a friendship circle, you are spending so much collective time with one another that really there's no possible way to hide who you are. You couldn't keep the act up for, you know, 8-hour periods, which has definitely happened, you know. So spend a year doing that with some people. You know who they are. You know how to annoy them. You know how they annoy you. You know what they love and what they don't love. And you know how to make them smile, and you know how to make them angry. And there is not a single person of my friendship group that I've met online that I don't know all of those ins and outs to. These are people that I have now known for 15 years due to the internet, that have carried through, and I've been to their houses, they've flown over to England, and they've recently been to my wedding. That I know, they're not online friends anymore. They're the closest friends that I have, even though there's a massive distance difference between us.
Sam and I wandered through the many corners of the gaming world and how it's developed over the last 15 years, including the troubles with predatory people, addiction, and misogyny.
There's always the bad person in a social group, and it's the same in real life. It's just easier to do that online, and that means there will always be a problem with misogyny online, and there's not really much that we can do about that, other than when it happens in front of us, you stand up for it. And if, like, I'll give you a complete transparent example. As a friend that we'd known for, you know, many years, had said something that was uncomfortable to us towards a female in our group, and we took him to one side and explained, you know, this is completely unacceptable and it can never happen again. You know, we're going to speak to such and such about this, but like this, if this ever happens again, you know what's going to happen here. And it happened again. It happened again. He did the same thing twice. We banned him from the server, removed him from our friendship group, and we never spoke to him again. It's very easy to just get into that mindset of like, yeah, it doesn't matter. It's all spoken into a microphone. It's not in real life. It probably didn't mean anything. And if everybody did that, then it would be a much more dangerous place to be in. But no, and I know that to be a fact, that most communities would be very zero tolerance on anything like that. We as a community, as people that interact with the internet and have grown up with it, really do have a responsibility in ourselves to look after the people that use it as well, especially people that are new to it. And I think that, at least from my community and myself speaking, I think we're very good with that. We'll try our best to make sure they feel comfortable, and we certainly don't let them get mistreated.
This is a conversation I could have had for days on end. Sam went to great lengths to make sure I truly understood that the relationships he made online never needed to materialize into an in-person meeting. Those connections were just as valuable, meaningful, and fulfilling as other relationships he had. And there's so much more of Sam's story we didn't get to touch on. The fact that one of his best friends lives in Japan, and Sam spent 4 years learning Japanese to improve their conversations during gameplay. He met his wife playing League of Legends, and has gone to countless esports events where he's made lots and lots more friends. Maybe it's silly to say, but I literally never thought you could build real, genuine relationships online. That could be a reflection on me and my transactional interactions with the web, with work and retail. But the social part of social media has always been lost on me. I'm so appreciative to have both Belle and Sam's perspectives because they sit in very different corners of the internet. Belle, I see as sitting at the helm of a third place, predominantly in the Gen Z young female media space. And the way she's able, or perhaps chooses, to interact with her community and audience is much more controlled. There are comment sections, inboxes, and written broadcast channels that can be mediated and referred back to should anything go awry. People can pop in and out easily and pleasurably, but it's nowhere near as free and upfront as Sam's world, being on a video call with strangers for hours in a day, having the liberty to drop a lot of boundaries. It can be hard to wrap your head around the depths of these relationships, but actually we all had a taste of it during COVID. All of our relationships moved to video calls, Zoom quizzes, game lobbies. I mean, I even went on a couple of online dates. And no, it wasn't for everyone, but it did make us feel a hell of a lot more connected when movement wasn't free and open, which is the case for a tremendous amount of people for a number of reasons. So let's look at the checklist. Can you gather easily? Yes. Regularly? Yes. Pleasurably? Absolutely. Finding your niche and your tribe. Inexpensively? 100%. Somewhere neutral, you can socialize, interact, and just be. Yes, yes, and I think yes. I couldn't end the episode without thinking about what kind of third place I might be trying to make with this podcast. It's accessed online with my little videos on Instagram and TikTok. If you haven't seen those yet, they're fun and totally out of my comfort zone. But is there more I could be doing?
Last question.
Yep.
As a newbie, someone completely in the dark.
We have a term for that. It's called noob.
As a noob?
Yeah.
What's my roadmap in? What's my roadmap to becoming part of this community, getting myself involved, get myself interested?
Well, it depends on your interest, but I mean, the most obvious jump for me is you create a Discord community around this amazing podcast, and you have listeners and the guests that you've had on join in on the Discord, answer any questions that people, members of the public have, be involved in it yourself, ask what the public would want, and make sure that everyone involved has a space to talk about what's been discussed today and in previous episodes so that they can share their own personal experiences, relate to it how they want, and mingle with like-minded folk who experience and are fond of similar things.
Only time will tell what this little corner of the internet will become. If you want to, you can join us on social media and Discord at Floating Space Podcast. But for now, it's on to the next, and I hope you'll join me through Floating Space. Next time on Floating Space.
I mean, I think there's a lot of freedom in the dark. You look at nightlife and that's where a lot of subversive movements began.
So places like this are places where you can grow into a young adult, basically, and then go forth as a confident queer and conquer the world.
A big thank you to all the contributors to this episode. Floating Space is hosted and produced by me, Katie Stokes. Artwork is by Allegra Lockstadt. This podcast is powered by Transmission Roundhouse.